It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Good morning. Remember, acting DNI Rick Grenell declassified the names of top Obama officials behind the unmasking of Flynn. He carried the list to the Justice Department. Now, DOJ says they're not releasing that list, but it is within Grenell's right to do so. Now, unmasking, to be clear, means revealing the names of U.S. citizens contained in intelligence reports. To do so for political reasons is against federal law. And as our own Ed Henry broke the news last night, this could present real problems for Obama officials because the unmasking came between the period of election day and inauguration day. And sources told Ed, Grenell has 4 or 5 more batches of intel to release. One in particular could pose real issues for former CIA director John Brennan. Meanwhile, Flynn is left in legal limbo a little longer. It's an unusual move in a criminal prosecution given the DOJ abandoned the effort. Now outside groups will be allowed to offer opinions. Judge Evan Sullivan are ordering the court to accept amicus briefs or friend of the court filings. Sullivan writing this, at the appropriate time, the court will enter a scheduling order governing the submission of any amicus curiae briefs. Well, Flynn's attorney, Cindy Powell, responded, writing in part, the proposed amicus brief has no place in this court. No further delay should be tolerated or any further expense caused to him and his defense. This would be further extended if Sullivan calls for evidentiary hearings as well. Senator Rand Paul, who will offer an amendment on the Senate floor today on FISA abuse, had this to say.
They brought him in to try to create a crime. What a terrible travesty of justice. The ultimate thing for us in the legislature is we should not let these abuses of power happen again. And I'm pushing hard to make sure that we take this power away from government.
Now, the timeline for Grenell's release of that list is unclear. Could be as soon as today. We'll have to wait and find out as the Flynn case plays out.
All right, Griff Jenkins on Fox and Friends this morning. Sandy Rios with you. Yeah, I think that's the big news of the day of the 24-hour cycle. Well, two things. Richard Grenell, I think he will release that list. It's just my hunch. I don't really know. But I think he was placed in that position to stir things up and to release documents, and that's what he's been doing. Now, there's a lot more things to be unmasked besides who the unmaskers were in the last, 10 days of Barack Obama's presidency, where they unmask all these people that were just happened to be affiliated with President Donald Trump. We're going to find out. I think Richard will release that. And we will know in short order. The second part of that was also a bombshell, and that is that U.S. District Judge Emmett Sullivan, who was presiding over the Flynn case, has decided, even though the Justice Department has dropped the charges, well, he's just not sure how to proceed. And so what he's going to do is open it up for third-party amicus briefs. Already, a group called the Watergate Group, that's for those of you who are young, that was when they impeached President Trump. President Nixon. Watergate was a huge deal in this country in 1973, before many of you were born. And Watergate is a symbol of unmasking, I guess you could use that word again, government corruption, although it depended on which side of the fence you sat on as to whether that was a righteous cause or not. These attorneys feel it was. And so remember that 2,000 of them signed a letter demanding Attorney General Barr resign. And so now we have many of them filing. It looks as though they've actually already filed their amicus brief. There is a lot to say about this case, and I'm going to get into it, but I'm going to do it a little bit later in the show. So stay tuned. I've got lots of very fascinating information for you. Meanwhile, America is still shut down. Not everywhere, but in some places it is unbearable. In Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, yesterday, a gentleman, David Sprintz, posted on his Facebook page a picture of Philadelphia police. There were probably, I'm guessing, 15 police cars driving together, clearing out streets. They were shutting off streets. They were on the loudspeaker shouting at people to stand 6 feet, not get closer than 6 feet. It was so really surreal, and I want you to listen to it. Let's listen.
This is what the cops are doing now with COVID. They're clearing streets. I'm walking down Allegheny heading to the L to go to work, and this is what's going on now. Everybody has to maintain 6 feet of space between everybody, apparently. So they're blocking off all streets. Wow. This is crazy. This is insane what's going on here. This coronavirus has really officially gotten out of control. So this is what's going on in Philadelphia now. It's getting so severe, the virus, that they are pushing people away from each other, maintaining 6 feet of space. And if you don't, they said they will arrest you.
Yeah, that doesn't send chills up your spine. You must have not had your coffee this morning. I mean, can you imagine in your own town if suddenly you can't go out and the police are patrolling and yelling at you through these loudspeakers telling you have to stay 6 feet apart or you'll be arrested? It's and closing down streets so you can't drive down them. I don't know if you heard him say he was on his way to work. He's trying to get to work. It's just a surreal. Meanwhile, you've got the likes of Maxine Waters out in California. She has an opinion about protests and people getting out, and she expresses it. This is clip 8.
You know, our governors are under, you know, great stress. And the protests that have been organized, the protests that will try to intimidate our governors to open up everything, are protests where, you know, the people participating in that should be ashamed of themselves. They should not be encouraged in any way. They should not be encouraged from the top leadership of this country to go out and do that. I think that our governors are for the most part, not all of them, and I'm certainly not talking about Governor Kemp in Georgia, but I'm talking about our own Governor Newsom here in California, who's done a wonderful job, and about Cuomo in New York, whose updates have been so helpful to so many of us across the country. I know the pressure is on, and I know that you're trying to hold the line, and I want you to hold the line. I don't want to see these establishments open back up. And I want the federal government to join with the cities and the states to support these families in every way that we can.
Yeah, she goes on to describe all the giveaways she wants to do. She wants the government to pay rent. She wants the government to pay for everything. We don't want you to go back out. We'll take care of you. We'll pay for it. It reminds me of a documentary I saw. It might have been the same documentary I referred to yesterday with Joseph Stalin and how he took power, but there was a debriefing between the this is a different movie that I saw. It was about a takeover in Russia of a certain province during the revolution, and the leader who represented, the military leader who represented the old Russian Guard, the White Russians, had fought valiantly the communists, and the communists were kind of a ragtag group, but when the subversion was over, the communist won, and they brought him in for questioning, and they were sitting across the table from each other, and the Russian, White Russian officer or general was saying to them, you know, I don't understand how you did this. You made promises that you couldn't keep. You kept saying that you would take care of people. You would do this. You would eradicate that. But you know you can't do that. And the communist just smiled back and said, it doesn't matter if we did it. We promised it, and it caused us to win, and that's all there is. This is what's happening. The leftists among us are promising the moon. They don't want you to work because then you have to, you know, I could say something a little crass, but I won't. Then you have to, let's say, survive by the milk of the government. And so that's what they want, because then they have complete control, whether it's your medical care, the future of your children, your salary, your food, where you can travel, where you can't. This is where they want to take it. Do not be mistaken. How can you miss it? And you may be in a smaller community in this country and you think it's not so serious. You know, you just, oh, that's not going to ever happen. Don't think that. Please look outside again, your own circumstances. Look outside of your small world. There's nothing wrong with having a small world, except that sometimes if you are not careful, it is too small. And you don't see things from a larger perspective. As I said to you yesterday, totalitarians will not be content to let you stay quiet and living your own life. It will not happen that way. We have seen that with the radical LGBT movement. You've seen it in public schools. I saw it, remember, in the, you won't remember, but in the Justice Department under Barack Obama, I had friends there, and I remember it wasn't enough to accept that there would be LGBT employees or transgender, not transgender yet then, but LGBT employees who would be marrying, you know, other people, and you were not, it wasn't enough not to say anything or criticize. You were required to attend showers celebrating babies that came out of same-sex couples. You were required to celebrate same-sex marriages. It was in a memo. I'll never forget reading it. They will not, the totalitarians among us, whatever the issue, will not allow you to stay neutral. Pastors, you will not be allowed to stay neutral. You will have to stand and declare either now or later. You cannot hide in the shadows. It will not work that way. You will have to declare your position. And so that's what's happening in California. Ironically, yesterday, in the 25th district, and that's the district where Katie Hill was the bisexual congresswoman from who was sleeping with both, living with three. There were three of them. It was just bizarre, and some really bizarre pictures came out featuring her, and she finally was. I don't know if she resigned or if they asked her to resign. I wish I could be more specific, but let's just say she's gone. So there was a special election, and what happened was at the last minute, the Democrats, so this is in one of the few Republican areas of California, it's Lancaster's part of it, but I don't know what the rest of it is. The Democrats in charge decided to set up a special voting place in the most liberal area of that county, of that area. And so the Republicans started to cry foul. The president spoke up about it because this was mostly mail-in ballots. And what happened was most of the mail-in ballots had come in from Republicans, and they were certainly in favor, and even the independents were voting for Mike Garcia to replace Katie Hill in this interim election. So what happened last night was it looks as though Garcia has won. That's what the at least at this point, it looks like he's ahead, unless they can pull out some sort of a rabbit out of a hat or votes that, gee, they just discovered in the trunk of a car, which could happen. That's the 25th district in California. And also in Wisconsin, Tom Tiffany prevailed in a special election. He is replacing Sean Duffy, and he was supported by the president. So that's another good thing for the president. Also in Nebraska, the president, I think, doubled his numbers in the Nebraska primary, presidential primary. And by that, I mean the entire total of the votes he got in Nebraska in 2016 were totaled in the presidential, were doubled in the Nebraska presidential primary yesterday. So one candidate in California, at least tentatively, has won who was supported by President Trump. The gentleman in Wisconsin was supported by President Trump, and now in Nebraska, he did very well in the presidential primary. So I didn't even know this. To be honest with you, I confess to you, I did not know those races were taking place. I only heard, you know, peripheral accounts. And so I just wanted you to hear about that. Now, let's see. Where shall I go next? Oh, I'm going to have to go quickly. Let me just say that, oh, there was a hearing yesterday on Capitol Hill with Anthony Fauci. And I don't have time to play this clip. Rand Paul did an incredible job. As far as I could tell, he was the only one. They did most things virtually. Fauci ended up not going in. Remember, I told you he was under so-called partial quarantine. And so he ended up staying home and being on his computer. But Rand Paul challenged him. He said, Dr. Fauci, I think humility is required. The models were so wrong. You have gotten so many things wrong. Kids need to go back to school. We're hurting the poor. We're hurting our families. Economies are being crashed, and you are not the end all. You are not the guru. He didn't say that word, but close to it. I don't believe that one man should make all of these decisions, in all due respect. And so Rand Paul did a really good job of challenging him on as a doctor to a doctor, and it's worth listening to. In fact, let's put that exchange on our Facebook page, Adam, since I didn't have a chance to play it. I want to take a break now because when we come back, we're learning more about what China's up to in terms of chemical biological warfare. And Claire Lopez will join us next to talk about what she has to report about what she has found. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
You know, some stories demonstrate the urgent need for God's Word, and I believe that Lilithas is one of them. This is Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. Lalitha was raised as a Hindu in India. She was forced into an arranged marriage at an early age, and her husband was killed tragically in an accident. Penniless and alone, Lalitha was sold into a prostitution ring for 10,000 Indian rupees, no more than 130 U.S. dollars, and lived in utter hopelessness for many years before a former prostitute introduced her to Jesus, the great lover of her soul. Lalitha said, "Peace and hope flooded my heart," and she learned to share Christ and led more than 100 Hindus to Jesus before dying tragically of AIDS. If this story demonstrates the urgent need of God's Word, you can help. Visit sendbiblesnow.org, sendbiblesnow.org, or call Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
This is good news, maybe exactly when you need it to. Right now, MediShare is waiving their new member fees. This could save you money on top of all that you'll save each month by becoming a member of MediShare. So many people are looking for a healthcare solution right now, seeing the cost of COBRA plans, for instance, and MediShare is the affordable alternative to health insurance. The typical family saves $500 a month. You might save even more. MediShare is a Christian community that shares each other's healthcare costs, and because of the current economic situation, they're making it easier than ever. Apply by May 30th, and you can save an additional $170 on your first month. I'll give you the number here in a second, and if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Just tell them the promo code SHARE to receive your additional savings. Maybe now is the time to make the switch, like more than 400,000 people already have, and start saving. Here it is. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE, 833-44-BIBLE.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is more than just exceptional academic programs, NCAA athletics, and state-of-the-art facilities. They believe in training champions for Christ. They know that where academic excellence and unwavering faith meet, there is liberty. Explore their campus virtually and learn how you can train as a champion for Christ online or on campus by texting Todd to the number 49596. That's Todd to the number 49596. Leave and never return. That's what several high-profile gay lawmakers are telling the doctors and nurses who work with Samaritan's Purse, the Christian humanitarian relief agency run by evangelist Franklin Graham. Samaritan's Purse had operated a field hospital in Central Park in cooperation with Mount Sinai, treating hundreds of patients. But New York City Council Speaker Corey Johnson says it's time for Samaritan's Purse to pack up and leave. Johnson said the ministry's presence in New York City is an affront to his values of inclusion and is painful for all New Yorkers who care deeply about the LGBTQ community. This man's hatred of Christians is so perverse, ladies and gentlemen, he would rather have his fellow citizens suffer rather than accept the charity of Christians. It appears that not only is New York's government infested with anti-Semitism, but they're also dealing with a virulent strain of homofascism and anti-Christian bigotry. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
There's nobody ever been tougher on China than me. Our relationship with China was good until they did this. All I can say is wherever it came from China. They didn't report what was happening inside of China. No, I'm not happy with China. They didn't want us to close our borders to China. The only leader of a country that closed our borders tightly against China. We're talking to China, and we've expressed how we felt. We're not happy about it.
That's the president talking about, well, guess what? China. He's been talking about China ever since I can remember hearing about President Trump, or Trump before he was president. He's been calling out all called arms about China. Ironically, when he got into that dust up in the Rose Garden with this reporter from CNN who was, she looked Chinese. I'm sure she was Chinese based on her name and her appearance. An American national who works for CNN. He got in this back and forth with her yesterday where she accused him of bragging about the number of tests available. By the way, the entire press conference, or at least a lot of it, The reporters were badgering the president about America not having enough testing. Why don't we have more tests? Why do we have tests? Why so-and-so has more tests? Why don't we have tests? And the president then, you know, assured them that we actually are doing more testing than any, we've done more tests than any country in the world. And then she speaks up and says, you know, well, why do you have to say that? Why do you have to put it that way? Why do you have to make it a bragging right? And so he landed pretty hard on her. And he said, he said, why don't you ask China? Well, because of that, the media is going crazy. They're calling him xenophobic, he's criticizing Chinese. That's what they're inferring. He's a racist. I wish I had time. I'd play clips for you. But this is what we're up against. And meanwhile, the media, of course, is not covering what China is actually doing. It's really an amazing time. I have never seen anything to this degree. I lived through Watergate and the Vietnam War, and I saw the media go south during those years, but I've never, ever seen it quite like this. So what is happening in China? Did the coronavirus come from the Wuhan lab? How did it get out? Was that an accident or was that on purpose? Well, I don't think we know right now, but we are learning more and more. And so I've asked Claire Lopez to join us this morning. Claire is the founder and president of Lopez Liberty. You'll recognize Claire's voice because she's been with us so many times. Claire was with what we call the agency, the CIA, for a number of years. Before that, Claire, I learned something about you. I've missed all these years, that you completed Marine Corps Officer Candidate School in Quantico, but then you decided instead to go into the CIA. I did not know that. You're tougher than I knew.
Oh, thanks, Sandy. It's good to be with you again. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. All right, Claire, you had made your, you know, spent your life investigating these kinds of things, and so you've been looking into this Wuhan lab and the connection with the Chinese Communist Party, and you say in your article in Newsmax that the Wuhan lab is central to China's biological warfare efforts. All right, we have to talk about this because biological weapons has not been something, you know, during Vietnam, it was more commonly discussed. I think people understood it better. But give us a little thumbnail sketch of what biological warfare is and what the state and the treaties that have been established in this world in regard to them up to this point.
Right. So, you know, up through the 20th century, a number of countries, including the United States as well, had offensive biological weapons programs. But President Nixon, back in 1969, ended the United States' offensive biological weapons program. We kept, obviously, a program for defensive purposes, that is to create vaccines or to develop therapeutic treatments. But anything offensive was ended by President Nixon in 1969. And then, along in 1972, came the Biological Weapons Convention. It's a full name, Convention on the Prohibition, Development, Production, Stockpiling of Bacteriological, Biological, and Toxin Weapons and on Their Destruction. So you can see why the shorter name, Biological Weapons Convention. Officially ratified in 1975. And by the way, China, the People's Republic of China, is a signatory to that convention since 1984, prohibited to be developing offensive biological weapons, agents, or toxins. But it does.
All right, so let's talk about that. Claire, how do we know that they are? I mean, what do we know about what goes in the Wuhan lab? And it's not the only lab, as I understand it. But what would make you think that this was actually anything more than scientific research to try to help people be more healthy in fighting viruses?
Well, aside from a number of official reports, for example, the Pentagon itself put out a January 2001 report called Proliferation, Threat, and Response, and openly stated in that report, 2001, China is believed to possess an offensive biological warfare capability. And that is, of course, well after its ascension to the treaty back in 1984. We've also got something from much more recently, and that is August 2019. The Department of State, the report called Adherence to Compliance with Arms Control, Nonproliferation, and Disarmament Agreements and Commitments, raised concerns diplomatically, as you would expect, about whether China were complying with its treaty, Biological Weapons Convention commitments. And then it says, State Department. This is State Department again, 2019. The report states the U.S. assesses that China possessed an offensive biological weapons program from the early 1950s to at least the late 1980s. That puts it well beyond the signatory period, the point at which the Chinese signed the Biological Weapons Convention in 1984. What that means is they think it's still ongoing. Go ahead.
Claire, one thing. I've been, Judy Mikovits, the doctor who's accusing Dr. Fauci, is very controversial. But one of the things I learned from listening to her talk was that her words were that they were in these labs, have been teaching, for instance, coronavirus, how to get beyond infecting just animals to infecting humans, that they were actually teaching the virus to do that. Her allegation is that they were teaching that in the Wuhan lab. Would that not indicate, why would you do that, apart from some sort of nefarious purpose?
Well, it sure seems so to me. And what you're talking about are gain-of-function studies. That's what they're called, gain-of-function. And where we get the information about that, a lot of this, by the way, I mean, I'll cite you one here, but a lot of this is open-source scientific writing in peer-reviewed scientific journals. And so in December 2015, Bill Gertz refers to this possibility as well. He talks about the Wuhan Institute of Virology, citing an Israeli researcher by the name of Danny Shoham, former Israeli military intelligence, now at the Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies. But back to this study from December of 2015, it's called, its title is A SARS-like Cluster of Circulating Bat Coronaviruses Shows Potential for Human Emergence. These titles tend to be like that, rather long. But it describes what I said, a gain-of-function study. And what that is, are efforts to make a virus more something, either more virulent, more contagious, more infectious, more something. In this case, according to that study, which included at least one scientist named Xi Jing Li from the Wuhan Virus Virology Institute, she was part of that study, which was done in collaboration with the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. What they did is they took elements of different viruses, the SARS virus, severe acute respiratory syndrome virus, the bat coronavirus, and the HIV, human immunodeficiency virus, and they genetically, synthetically, in the laboratory, combined these things in a way that never would have happened in nature and created something called a chimera, meaning a hybrid. That's in this study, written in December 2015, published. So why would you do that? Unless you're engaged in offensive biological warfare? Because what that did, gain of function, allowed this virus monster, this Frankenstein they created, to be more transmissible, at least, perhaps other things.
Claire, the other thing that's curious to me, understatement, is that China will not cooperate, will not let us, destroy the samples, would not let us go into the lab as just to shut out the international inquiries about how coronavirus has started and what this is all about. And yet you just said that they were working with the University of North Carolina. We also know that Anthony Fauci authorized at least $3.7 million in research in the Wuhan lab, and as I understand it, we actually think that was the second of a similar grant, which was $3.7 million. That's a little unclear, but we know at least 3.7 and perhaps twice that. All right, so why are we giving money to the Wuhan lab and then they're shutting us out and we can't know what's happening in there? Your thoughts about that?
Well, you're right that the Chinese regime, the Communist Chinese Party, has acted exactly as an authoritarian, totalitarian dictatorship that it is in the wake of the release of this virus, however it got out, which means destroyed the evidence. The virus's samples were destroyed, as you said. Scientists were, quote, disappeared. And they shut things down within China. Travel was shut down within China, but not outside of China. Studies, information, any kind of release of information was forbidden, et cetera, et cetera. But to go backwards, to be clear, it was the Obama administration and the department, the Cabinet Department of Health and Human Services, which provided a grant, and perhaps the Pentagon did too in parallel, a grant to the NIH, National Institutes of Health, of which Dr. Fauci's Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases is a division or a department. So the grant came from the Obama administration through the Health and Human Services Department. Now, why they were working with, this was an alliance, EcoHealth Alliance it was called, and that is a group of different laboratories, not just Wuhan, a whole bunch, EcoHealth Alliance, and that money was divvied up among them. So Wuhan Institute of Virology probably got some part of that, but it wasn't the whole thing, and it wasn't Anthony Fauci directing the money. It was the Obama Administration Health and Human Services Department. But I will say that by late 2014, even the Obama administration was so alarmed by what was going on in these studies that it cut off that funding. Obama administration cut off the funding to the EcoHealth Alliance. Then sometime under the Trump administration, 2017, the grant was renewed back to the EcoHealth Alliance, and again a portion of the total amount may have gone to Wuhan, and then there may have been a parallel Pentagon grant as well. Now, we don't know to what extent our institutions perhaps were using that access into the laboratories to gather information on what they were doing, question mark?
Yes. So we don't know. We just don't know. And we know that China's not going to cooperate. But all right, we just have a couple of minutes left, Claire, but you all go into this, I think, very important cradle upon which all this sits, and that is that the Chinese think differently than we do. You say they're steeped in thousands of years of Chinese history and warfare. So say something about that. How can we understand the Chinese mind in regard to this?
Well, the Western world, as we think about it, and all the world that is based on Western civilization, is Judeo-Christian based. That is a very different thing than 5,000 years or so of Chinese civilization, which is not Judeo-Christian based, but is steeped in warfare. It is nonstop warfare for thousands and thousands of years. Sun Tzu, of course, the Art of War author back maybe about 500 B.C., is all about how to wage warfare against others to conquer and dominate them. Much more recently, two PLA, People's Liberation Army colonels, wrote in 1999, Unrestricted Warfare, lists the different ways, diplomatic warfare, political warfare, economic warfare, financial warfare, and, oh, by the way, biochemical warfare, different ways of warfare that China thinks perfectly applicable, perfectly acceptable to wage against the rest of the world to regain global hegemony, because that's how they see themselves, the global hegemon of the entire world. And then I cite this speech in my Newsmax article that was translated into English in 2005. It was given by China's defense minister and the vice chairman at the same time of the Communist Party's Central Military Commission. This is a general named Qi Haoxian. And he openly refers to the Communist Party's intention to militarily defeat, occupy, and colonize the U.S. And what about all of us millions of Americans? Quote from the speech, the Communist Party will be using special means to clean up America, that is with new bioweapons.
Now, Claire, that's all we have time for. That's the way. That's amazing. And we're going to put your article on our Facebook page. Coronavirus didn't spring from nothing. It's something that we all need to be aware of. Boy, do we ever. Claire, thank you so much. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
A false balance is an abomination to the Lord. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. All charges against Lieutenant General Michael Flynn have been dropped. The news came a week after new evidence released by Flynn's lawyers showed FBI agents apparently trying to trap Flynn into lying to them, hoping he would be prosecuted or fired. The evidence also suggested they knew he had not committed a separate crime. In spite of them having no evidence against Flynn and no evidence of Russian collusion by President Trump, the FBI and the Mueller team proceeded to charge General Flynn in an effort to get him to provide them with evidence against President Trump. This should sicken every single American.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Long time ago, I was at Michigan State, and I'd gone through a presentation, and I knew there was a militant atheist in the audience. The Q&A started. I knew he was going to have to say something. So I said, are there any questions? He shot his hand up. I said, yes, sir. He said, if there is a good God, why doesn't he stop all the evil in the world? I said, sir, maybe because if he did, he might start with you and me, because we do evil every day.
Cross-examine, Saturday mornings at 9 Central on American Family Radio.
So they asked me to enter my email address, and the next thing I know, I start getting emails from companies I never even knew existed. What's up with that?
Here at the American Family Association, you have our word that we won't give away, sell, or lease your email address to any other organization or company. We're thankful when you take the time to subscribe to AFA Action Alerts, 1 Million Moms, Engage Magazine, or any of our other online newsletters.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Abraham Lincoln declared at Gettysburg that America is a nation conceived in liberty. It's part of our DNA as a people. The founders believed that where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. The lockdown orders that keep churches from meeting are unbiblical and un-American. The scriptures command us in Hebrews not to forsake the assembling of yourselves together. You can't do that online. 1,000 pastors in California have pledged they will declare independence from the tyrannical edicts of men and resume meeting together with their congregations and with the Lord on May 31st. The First Amendment guarantees to us the free exercise of religion, not just freedom of belief. No governor can take away a right that is granted to us in the Constitution. May their tribe increase.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. We've witnessed lately the release of a slew of formerly classified documents. Some of them have shed clarifying light on a long-running campaign to thwart Donald Trump's election and undermine his presidency. Mr. Trump calls the scandal thus exposed Obamagate and asserts that it, quote, makes Watergate look small time, unquote. The question that defined that earlier notorious abuse of power must now be asked of Mr. Trump's predecessor. What did the president know, and when did he know it? The recent document dump suggests that Barack Obama was aware of, and therefore complicit in, a plot to defeat Donald Trump at the polls and, failing that, to ensure he would not long occupy the White House. If that proves to be true, Obamagate must end, as did Watergate, with the man ultimately responsible and his senior subordinates driven from public life in disgrace. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
There was a debate here in the United States, and quite frankly throughout most of the West, as whether a rising China was in the interest of the United States and the wider world. As a young member of the Foreign Relations Committee, I wrote and I said, and I believe then what I believe now, that a rising China is a positive development, not only for China, but for America and the world writ large.
That's why Robert Gates, the former defense secretary for Barack Obama, in his book after he left office, said that Joe Biden got almost every foreign policy issue wrong. And that's the Democratic candidate, he would be the supposed Democratic candidate for president. Sandy Rios back with you. Well, there's more to say about Vice President Biden and China, but I don't want to divert to that right now. I want to go back to this whole business of Emmett Sullivan, the judge in Michael Flynn's case, actually deciding not to drop the charges, but to continue this and to ask for third-party groups to weigh in amicus briefs. And he's even talking about maybe holding hearings. So rather than let Michael Flynn go, the judge, Emmett Sullivan, wants to dangle things a little bit longer. And actually, this is quite dangerous, and I'm going to talk to you about it in a bit of detail, if I could. Let me just first of all talk about what Judge Sullivan has just done. He said in this order yesterday that he expects individuals and organizations will seek to intervene in the politically charged case. Having others weigh in could preface more aggressive steps that the federal judge in Washington could take, including, as many outside observers have called for, holding a hearing to consider what to do. Now, this is nothing more than Judge Sullivan. Some are saying there's no way to prove this, but people that I trust are saying that this is like a marching order from President Obama, who has been speaking up lately and trying to stop this unraveling of his, you know, his great accomplishments during his presidency, where he actually started undermining the rule of law, surveilling Americans, unmasking them, targeting an incoming presidential candidate duly elected by the people, ruining people's lives like General Flynn in the process, trying to get back at General Flynn. Remember, I told you yesterday that President Obama told President Trump, as they were transferring power, that all he had to worry about was that Kim Jong-un in North Korea and General Michael Flynn. Those were his two, should be, his two greatest concerns. Obama hated General Flynn because, again, General Flynn was the only person who served under President Obama who defied him, actually, in court, in Congress. When he was testifying, he said, Al-Qaeda is not on the run. What we're being told is not, these are these are my words. This is my assessment of the overall effect of what he said, that the generals, the news was reporting political views of what was happening in the region, but was not true, was untethered from reality. Plus, General Flynn was trying to, as director of national intelligence then, trying to reconfigure the intelligence agencies, which were so messed up. And he could see that. And he became, you know, like enemy number one to Obama before President Trump was even ever the candidate. So Judge Emmett Sullivan, in all of this time, has been hearing this case. We also know that the attorneys who were assigned to General Flynn, or that he hired, who he ended up hiring, were not serving his best interests. I think they're, in fact, Eric Holder, it turns out, was part of that that particular group of attorneys. I did not know that. Covington and Burlington, I think it's called, Covington and something, and in Washington, D.C. And so we know that they had mixed interests, that they had conducted themselves poorly in part of other parts of the case, and so they were trying to cover. Whatever they did, they encouraged him to plead guilty. And that also we're finding out that they charged him exorbitant rates. Some of the attorneys that I've heard go back and forth on this say that it's, I think General Flynn owes $3.5 million to that law firm. It's outrageous, and they broke down the number of hours. It's just an outrageous amount. Plus, the general, of course, is bankrupt. He had to sell his house, and we know, because of the things that have been revealed, that he was threatened that they would destroy his son if he did not plead guilty. All of these things are the backdrop to why the Justice Department ended up dropping charges, even though Flynn did, yes, plead guilty to lying to the FBI. It wasn't under oath. It was it's what they call a process crime. And based on this, Emmett Sullivan threw the book at him. In fact, in one proceeding, I don't have the exact words in front of me here, but Emmett Sullivan actually accused Lieutenant General Flynn of treason. And it was just an amazing moment. And it was a shock because that wasn't even part of the proceeding. The proceeding was to determine if General Flynn had lied to the FBI. It wasn't about whether he had committed treason. Of course he hasn't committed treason, I hasten to add. It isn't that he's guilty of that, but that wasn't the point. That wasn't the point of the court hearing. No, he was never accused of that. There wasn't any relationship between nothing in court about committing any treason. Of course, I'm sure Emmett Sullivan would like to have had that spun, and he did have it spun, and really was destroying the reputation of General Flynn right there in the courtroom. And so Judge Sullivan has an opinion on this. He's not exactly an objective arbitrator. And now we know that he, when he was made his statement yesterday about opening this up to third-party people to add to submit amicus briefs, we have a group called Watergate Prosecutors, who we think have already, somehow they must have known. I don't know how that happened, but they already had their brief ready, and it looks like they may it may already be written. This is what Sidney Powell, General Flynn's attorney, said in response to the judge's failure to dismiss this case. She said, "This court has consistently, on 24 previous occasions, summarily refused to permit any third party to inject themselves or their views into this case." So are you hearing that? 24 different times, Sidney Powell tried to interject or introduce third-party evidence or third party's opinions or assessment of what happened, and the judge refused. And now that the Justice Department has dropped the charges against General Flynn, this judge, Emmett Sullivan, is suddenly wants to open it up to third-party opinions. And who wants to jump in and has is the Watergate prosecutors. And these are the left of the leftists. I'll make my point about that. Let's see. I'll give you an example of who these people are. We don't know totally yet because it just came out yesterday. We do have a list, but I can't personally tell you. But I can tell you about one. Jill Wine Banks is one of them. She, let's see. What has Jill Wine Banks tweeted? She says, in response during the so-called Russian collusion dust-up, she tweeted, "Could mean Mueller is working with the New York DA and Flynn gets immunity for kidnapping as well as his federal crimes." She also wrote, she thought the Steele dossier was absolutely solid. She thought the Avenatti mess, that Avenatti was telling the truth about this this client that he had, remember, Avenatti went to jail for lying. It was all made up, and yet Jill Wine Banks was all about it. She said, "I have criticized Republicans for not pursuing the Steele dossier allegations and encouraged them to pursue Avenatti's too." So Jill Wine Banks believed Avenatti, and she believed the dossier, which we know anybody, honestly, even someone of my experience, and when it comes to the law, that's almost nothing except I'm married to an attorney. That's my experience with the law. Could see that that dossier was absolutely ridiculous. And yet Jill Wine Banks, the attorney who's part of the Watergate prosecutors, was all about it. Now, this is what she also tweeted. This was in August of 2018. She said, "Criminal conspiracy between Kremlin and the Trump campaign are in plain view." Okay, so that's just one person. There are others that I'll probably find out about. I may have some more here in this pile as I get to it. But so Sidney Powell, has already responded to the judge. She said 24 times, basically, these are vernacular words, not legal language. "I ask you if we could introduce third-party amicus briefs, if they could weigh in on this case so that you get a broader understanding." And 24 times you said no. And now that the Justice Department is dropping the charges, you're telling us that you're going to open up to third-party amicus briefs. I want to read to you. Let me see if there's anything else in this. Of course, these 2,000 former justice employees that signed this letter, and that would include probably the one I just talked to you about, are accusing the Trump administration of pulling the strings in the Justice Department. This isn't about the law. It's a political move because Flynn lied to the FBI and he is guilty. In fact, on MSNBC, actually, let me just say, you think maybe after all this evidence has come out about what happened to General Flynn, that they might be speaking differently. Oh, but not so. Andrea Mitchell on MSNBC claimed that Russian President Vladimir Putin is behind Attorney General Barr's decision to drop the Flynn case. She actually said that on the air. I'm not going to read all of it, but that's what she said. And so here we go. We've got Adam Schiff saying, you know, the documents that were revealed from the interrogations in the basement of the House that were sealed, of all the people that were related to the so-called Russia collusion, all of those documents that were unmasked or revealed, made public last week by Richard Grenell, they prove his point. They prove there was Russian collusion. They prove it, which is the opposite. As I said, this is like Alice in Wonderland. They don't prove it. And on MSNBC, then we've got Andrea Mitchell telling us that it was Vladimir Putin that caused General Barr in the Justice Department to drop these charges. That's what we're up against, folks. And so let me just try to give you now the repercussions of what the General Emmett Sullivan's decision is. And I'll use other people's words to do that. Here's a statement by Rick Manning of Americans for Limited Government. The U.S. District Judge overseeing the Michael Flynn case has just broken the judicial system with his decision to let stakeholders and others express their views about the decision by the U.S. Justice Department's decision to drop the prosecution of Flynn with prejudice. The precedent that Sullivan is creating would allow the rioters in Ferguson, Missouri, to have equal standing with the county prosecutor in deciding whether charges should be filed. Sullivan is opening the door to well-funded interest groups to be able to override decisions by the elected president of the United States and confirmed designee in the Justice Department. In fact, by opening up this case, he opens the door for any U.S. citizen to contest in federal court the decision of the Obama Justice Department to not prosecute Hillary Clinton for her proven mishandling of classified materials. The Attorney General of the United States should contest this decision. Sullivan's decision would turn our federal court system into a battle of stakeholders with little concern for justice for the accused, and it is antithetical to the most basic legal principles of our nation. Now, I want to turn to something else, which is actually pretty complex, and I want to see if I can explain this because it is actually very, very important. Now, where is it? Here we are. There are some today now that are writing about this. This is they're going over the transcripts of this trial and going back and forth with Emmett Sullivan, the judge's words, and what was said by the prosecutors. And they've actually discovered what they think the Justice Department knows. And let me skip to this. Let's see if I can. A judge cannot, as I understand it, this is my lay way of explaining this, lay person, I'm not an attorney. Before you can accept a plea of guilty or at least a plea that you lied under oath, like Flynn was prepared to say he lied. Not under oath. No. Lied to the FBI. He was prepared to say he lied to the FBI. A judge cannot accept that unless there is a factual basis. And there's a legal code that says that. You can't just let somebody plead guilty if there is no factual basis for them pleading guilty. So in going back over the transcripts of the trial, it looks as though Judge Sullivan twice at least said he didn't understand what the factual basis was. In fact, at one point he said he's asking the prosecutors, these are questions that you would be prepared to answer anyway, such as, you know, how the government's investigation was impeded. What was the material impact of the criminality? Things like that. This is later in the trial. He still doesn't know exactly why it is that what it is exactly that General Flynn is pleading. What the reason for the lie was, and how General Flynn impeded their investigation. That was the accusation. He's saying you haven't really explained that. How the government's investigation was impeded. What was the material impact of the criminality? Things like that. This is the judge saying that. Here's the deal. The DOJ dismissed the charges, saying that the issue of materiality cannot be factually established based on the investigative records in the case. So what I'm trying to say to you is it looks as though it's possible. The DOJ may realize that Emmett Sullivan conducted the trial. He did not follow the code, and that he himself made a really big mistake. And they haven't called him out before this, but that is maybe why they dropped the charges, maybe trying to stop from embarrassing Judge Emmett Sullivan. But they may now have to go to the mat and explain and publicly embarrass him about his mishandling of this trial. That's what some people are saying and some people are thinking. So just giving you the best information I have this morning. All right. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.